All participants, please stand by. Your conference is ready to begin. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pellegrini Financial Investment Planning Council third quarter conference call, Return of the Market Bears. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Ryan Morcom. Please go ahead, Mr. Morcom.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everyone to our third quarter conference call. And I think we have a lot to talk about here this morning, so I'm going to start. And I'm going to kind of break this up into two different talks, I think. The third quarter itself, which was more standard, I suppose, I guess. And the first part of this fourth quarter, which is more the current environment that we're in. So I think first off, with the third quarter itself, we saw, you know, kind of a continuation of perhaps the summer doldrums where, you know, markets actually were pretty positive through the July and August time frames, you know, really riding on the good news essentially that came from markets and earnings in general for many of the companies. I see a lot of that, I think, was driven by certainly in the U.S., which was kind of the leading market and has been for the last number of years, but also the various corporate tax cuts that were implemented there at the beginning of 2019. And that, you know, was reflective in profits and revenues and growth, and, of course, in the markets accordingly. So in general, it started off quite fine through, like I said, July and August. September turned around where I think it was the beginning of a little bit of profit-taking to some degree. And I think trade war concerns was another aspect of what started turning the market the other way, and interest rates. And I think each of those we'll get into a bit more here towards the end of this call, but that September really started the downward trend and took that third quarter where we were in positive gains through July and August, and the month of September kind of negated those gains on a quarterly basis and turned what was into maybe a moderate gain into more of a nominal loss through that third quarter. And like I said, the first part of that was like I said, markets were driven by U.S. and profits there or corporate revenues. And that has been the leading economy, driven by technology generally, or technology sector, I should say. And that's part where, you know, part of the new age economy, I guess, to some degree, but also the reality of technology being in pretty much every aspect of our world nowadays. And those bigger companies, like the Googles and Amazons and Apples, I mean, those are the ones that kind of drive that technology sector. And part of what, you know, those technology companies have done, too, is they've really evolved over the years, too. So, you know, an Apple is a good example. It's not just a phone maker. I mean, obviously, it sells that, and it's partly its bread and butter, but it's a music streaming service, and it's a data storage service, and there's a lot of applications that these companies have nowadays that generate revenues, generate profits, and create a multifaceted type of company that, yes, you can say it's technology, but there's so many applications to it that that's really what drives those companies forward and has been why, yes, they've been leading economic growth and these markets in general. Financials have been a strong market as well, especially in the U.S. Again, that's just part and parcel of their economic growth. In Canada, we've been a market that's probably been treading water a little bit. You know, we've seen some nominal growth, I guess, in the TSX itself. Economically, we've been still growing, and even in Alberta, there's been economic growth. So employment numbers continue to improve, although the participation rate has kind of declined a little bit, so that's a bit of an offset. And, you know, we are seeing growth really across all provinces, just a bit more muted growth, I guess, for perhaps than the U.S., of course, and we're still reliant on a resource-based economy, and, of course, oil and gas itself still hasn't recovered. Europe has been some positive growth, again, a little bit more muted than the U.S., and even the Asian economies, and all these economies have also been, you know, this growth has also allowed their central banks to ease up a little bit on a lot of that fiscal monetary policy that they've implemented over the last number of years. So we've seen interest rates increase in many of these jurisdictions. And so that's, again, a sign of a healthy economy, but also those central banks trying to build up a little bit of cushion for when things might turn the other way again. So interest rates in particular, of course, we've had a couple interest rate increases here in Canada. There have been a number down in the U.S. I would expect that we're going to see a couple more in each jurisdiction over the next year. And that, you know, is positive, I guess, for our retirees. And you look at GIC rates, and we're finally climbing above that 3% level. But, of course, for those that borrow money, that is an extra expense where you don't get any extra revenue necessarily from what you're doing, but you have this added expense to borrow. And in Canada in particular, both the homeowners and even our farm economy, I mean, there's a lot of extra leverage or borrowing there that maybe we've become too accustomed to, and that will have an impact with these rising interest rates. And that is a thing I think that the central banks have to be wary of, is understanding of how far to go with these interest rate increases. And one of the things that the markets are certainly watching. When we look at inflation itself, I mean, it's been, I would say, somewhat subdued inflation rate. They're still looking at the core inflation rate of around 2%, and that's generally where things are sitting for the most part. It hasn't been an issue really to date. I think in the U.S., you know, there's a bit of maybe hope, I guess, that the wage inflation is creeping a little higher than that. It's hard to tell immediately on the current reports, but over the next few weeks, I think they'll get a better handle on understanding where that's at. But it isn't certainly an issue to be too concerned with at this point in time, and it's something, again, that the central banks monitor and try to counteract with interest rate increases as well at the same time. Again, inflation throughout Europe and even the Asian economies has been somewhat subdued. In Japan, I think that's where, you know, it's been a deflationary environment for many years back, but they've had actually positive inflation now for some time, around the 1% level. I think that is a positive, certainly from their central banker's view and their government policy. So they're, I would say, quite happy with where that's at. Enough so where they're getting probably closer from going from a negative interest rate environment to something that's zero or just slightly positive. And so we'll see what that turns about here in the next few months as well. On the commodity front, we've had more, I guess, volatility within the price of oil itself. So we've seen the oil price, certainly through the third quarter, turn upwards, I guess, through that quarter, which looked quite positive, certainly looked positive in the headlines. I guess what counteracts that in Canada is that the discount, of course, that applies to the Western Canada Select Western Canada Select crude price was pretty much at a record high through that quarter. So even though the price of oil might have been $75 or more, we had a discount of $50, which for a short period of time anyways, which obviously is a substantial amount. And that, of course, comes down to capacity and the fact that it's the struggle to move the oil that we produce here in any meaningful fashion, I guess, that doesn't cost more money, or just there isn't no capacity to get it down south. And with basically all this, whether it's Line 3 or Keystone or Trans Mountain, I mean, all these pipeline projects have impediments that, I guess, are slowing the process of getting these new pipelines in place. So whether it's an American organization that's putting the hang up, whether, you know, it's in Nebraska or it's in Minnesota with Line 3, or whether it's Trans Mountain and provincial issues between BC and Alberta, each of these pipeline projects has something that's holding up its completion. If and when all those projects come to fruition, well, then that eases a lot of that oil price discount, and that should be basically eliminated, I would suggest, at that point in time. In the meantime, that discount has has retracted a little bit, so it's not as deep as it once was, but it's still an issue. And of course, now at the same time here, or more recently, oil prices come back down again. And that's really based on, I think the expectation earlier on was Iran sanctions would take place and it would cut off a big chunk of the supply to the world market and help prop up the price of oil. But the reality is that, especially between Russia and the U.S., production there has continually climbed to where each of those are over $11 million barrels per day. Really has almost negated the effect of any Iran sanctions at this point in time. And so whether they remain and continue with those levels of production, time will tell, but that's really what has brought the price of oil back down. In regards to natural gas, again, it's pretty much at, I won't say a record low, but certainly a very low price at this point, dollar gigajoule in the marketplace. Again, just excess supply and not enough demand. And again, this maybe perhaps this LNG terminal in BC will help to get a better market price for Alberta natural gas. Time will tell again on that one. For commodities, you know, base metals have retreated a little bit. Some of the metals like gold or silver, gold has, you know, had a little bit of an upward tick there earlier in the third quarter, but again, has kind of retreated a little bit as of late, and really hasn't moved much over the last couple of years. Currencies, we've seen the Canadian dollar, of course, depreciate a little bit here for the most part of the summer, I guess. Accordingly, we've seen our hedges increase in a number of our mandates. So that's kind of protecting against that Canadian dollar, against foreign-held assets or foreign-held securities. Excuse me. Of course, the U.S. dollar is still really the strong currency of the globe and continues to be that way. Still view it as a safe haven, I guess, in that respect. Most currencies have depreciated a little bit against the U.S. dollar. I would say, in particular, the Chinese yuan has certainly retreated against the U.S. dollar. Partly that's trade war influenced. You know, partly there's probably some government controls there in China as well. And, you know, in some respects, that's maybe partly politics too, because when you have, for instance, the trade war and a number of tariffs or taxes being applied by the U.S. government on Chinese products, that drop or change in the currency is one means to negate a number of those tariffs or the value of those tariffs, right? So a 25% tariff, and all of a sudden you've seen your currency depreciate 10% against the U.S. dollar, well, all of a sudden that turns into a 15% tariff. So things like that happen in the background that help to negate some of the other political issues that go on around us. Other than that, you know, we would expect that the Canadian dollar, I think, would, it's been in kind of a range bound in these mid-70s mark, but I would think over the next year, given all things being equal still going forward, we would expect to see a little bit of a Canadian dollar increase as the next year goes by. Again, the U.S. dollar, I'm pretty sure they would like it to be to deflate a little bit against all of the currencies, but again, it's a struggle because of the fact that it is still viewed as the safe haven. And like I said, the Chinese yuan and some of these other Asian currencies are likely to depreciate against the U.S. over the next while. I would say that would be the same unless trade wars change and all of a sudden tariffs are removed. Well, then you would see a number of those other currencies probably jump up or increase again against the U.S. dollar. So I think the third quarter itself was generally a quieter quarter. Like I said, it was probably a quarter where we finished marginally down for the quarter, although as a year-to-date number, we were still up as a whole. I'm going to move now to just this current outlook and more the current month of October in particular, so that first quarter, the fourth quarter now that we're into. We had seen certainly more volatility in the markets generally across the board through the year. That, for sure, reared its head in the month of October. So that initial little trend of downward markets in September certainly carried on into October, where we saw a lot of volatility, a lot of negative markets, that at this point in time took us from a positive year-to-date to a slightly negative year-to-date number for most of our mandates. And I think for October, like I said, in how it kind of started from September, a few things happened. Of course, trade wars were still front and center for a lot of managers. And the trade wars are meaningful in the sense that when you actually apply tariffs, we're talking real dollars, right? So it does have an impact. And so that was certainly something that markets were concerned about. I think the election here that's, I guess, happening today right now, I guess, I mean, that's another factor I think that markets were concerned about. And, you know, it was that uncertainty, of course, in any political election cycle, that's kind of typical what markets might do. It doesn't mean necessarily matter who wins or loses. You know, it's a tough one right now for Democrats to win the Senate and probably just as tough to win the House, perhaps. But even if they did, one or both of them, markets aren't necessarily concerned with who's in power. It's just they know now certainty of who they're dealing with, right? And so that partly played into how October went as well. And I would say the other bigger impact, too, is interest rates. And interest rates, which, you know, again, we've had a number of increases through the year on both sides of the border, I guess, but interest rates were what, you know, markets view, of course, as one, as a strong economy. So if central banks obviously can raise interest rates, that means the economy is quite healthy and quite strong. But also, it is a detriment to markets in general or businesses in general because, again, as I mentioned before, it's an added expense, right? For no extra perceived revenue that you can get from whatever you're providing as a product or a service, but you have an added expense for any amount of leverage that you do have. And the concern more so going forward, I think, is the number of rate increases that might happen through the course of this next year. And so that resulted in markets, being pushed down by managers pulling out of certain asset classes, being more defensive. And that's how I know some of our core mandates have been defensively positioned for the last 2 or 3 months, and rightfully so, I guess. But that was really part of the impetus of what drove markets down through the month of October. Going forward, though, that's where we view, I think, yeah, we've had some volatility. We've had some, bigger negativity, I guess, in the month of October. But I think from many of our managers' perspectives, this is a healthy little correction. So going back to my title of Return of the Bear Markets, I don't think so, right? We've gotten into some bear territory, I guess, in regards to how far certain indexes or certain stock valuations have dropped. But for the indices themselves, we're not there. And I don't expect to be in the sense that the underlying fundamentals, whether it's U.S., Canada, Europe, Asia, there's still positive economic growth. There's still, healthy corporate profits. Corporate revenues, right? Employment, like I said, is improving, you know, on both sides of the border here in North America, and it's still healthy across Europe and Asia as well. So there's a lot of underlying fundamentals that point nowhere other than upwards, right? And I think that's where I would expect to see the end of the year market, whether that happens in November or December or early next year, where markets use this opportunity in October as a buying opportunity. And I would expect to see the markets turn around again from this point going forward. Like I said, it might not happen exactly in this month or next month, but to me, the underlying fundamentals are too strong to say otherwise. And until that changes, then yes, I would expect this to be a correction and expect some form of a rebound going forward. So I think that's where I'll wrap it up. I think, like I said, we've certainly seen a lot more volatility, but I think it's healthy volatility at this point in time, and it looks to us as being opportunity for many of our managers. So if any of you have questions, certainly feel free to give our office a call and speak to Perry, Parker, or myself. I'd certainly be happy to answer any of your questions. In the meantime, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk again soon.